when you come to a big picture school, the feel, the culture is all relatively the same. But for that local community, what it means to them is very nuanced and very unique and very individual to them.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I am excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Sun Sam, National Director of Partnerships at Big Picture Learning. So Sun, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
I am so happy to be here, Annalise. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. Let's set a little bit of context for our listeners as we get started. Big Picture Learning has been reimagining education, creating truly student-centered schools and personalized learning opportunities for young people for close to 30 years. Their mission is to activate the potential of schools, systems, and education through student-driven, real-world learning with a vision that all students live lives of their own design, nurtured by supportive mentors, meaningful relationships, and equal opportunities to succeed in education, in their careers, and through their civic participation. So today, there's 111 Big Picture Learning schools in the United States, and an additional 150-plus internationally are redefining student success. So with that sort of orientation for our conversation, Sun, why don't you sort of give us the 100,000-foot view about the why? Why almost 30 years ago was Big Picture Learning launched?
Yeah. Wonderful place to start, Annalise. Thank you so much for that. Why? Fundamentally, we believe that all young people are brilliant and are just born with innate gifts, talents, potential, and the capabilities to really change the world for good. We just fundamentally believe that. But we also know that the compliancy-driven, one-size-fits-all public education system that we have in the United States really does not service that goal or that mission. So our founders, Dr. Dennis Lipke and Dr. Elliot Washer, came together with some really educational heavyweights. We had Teddy Sizer, who was the founder of the Coalition of Essential Schools, and was a professor at Brown University. And then we also had our commissioner of education in Rhode Island at the time, Mr. Peter McWalters. They came together and forged a relationship to really redefine what schools could be. And so with also the help of Stan Goldstein, and I just want to say his name out loud and give some love because Stan just recently passed away. And he also was the founder of CVS Health now, but during our day, it was CVS Pharmacy. I share that because in order to do this good work, there's a lot of pieces that need to be in the place, whether it's finances, whether it's political capital, community will, parent involvement, all those different things. All those things were in play that helped our founders sort of start the school. But the mission is to really create school spaces that put young people at the center of their lives and their learning. And so the 10,000 feet view really is there's three core principles in our schools. The first principle is really around interests. We know that young people, if you ask them, they will share with you, they are consistently learning 24/7 around the things that they're genuinely interested in. So that's the first piece where young people are the curriculum and the community is the school. So when you look at the young people as curriculum, look at their curiosities, look at their interests, look at their passions, and leverage that as a learning framework for really thinking about rigorous learning. So that's the first aspect, is really interest-driven learning. The second aspect is around relationships. And something that we talk about all the time as adults, but there isn't a system in K-12 spaces, is around, it's not always what you know, but who you know. And we learned that as adults graduating college, trying to find a job, and then through other life experiences, we're like, oh, it's really about who you know, as well as like what you know and what you could bring to different positions, right? But it is a factual aspect of life that we all sort of navigate. But knowing this truth, what can we do in the K-12 system to truly expand students' social capital so they have more access and opportunities as they get older and sort of evolve in the world? So what we do is we connect based on their interests. We find local experts who share that interest with young people, and we match them up and we bring them together. So that's the second component, is really around authentic relationships. And the third piece is really around practice. And what this refers to is meaningful and authentic work and learning that has impact in the community and in the world. So in traditional schools, it can be perceived and seen as like the relationship between students and their teachers is very transactional. I do this assignment, I get a grade. I do this report, I get a grade. And at the end of the quarter, I do so many things, here's my grade. So it's very transactional. It serves its purpose, so we understand the reason for that. But I think what we want to call out is something very different, meaning what we are trying to do is ignite the fire in the bellies of our young people. And how we do that is by helping them see how their learning can truly impact the world. So now learning transcends me just getting a grade. Learning is about, oh my God, like my project that I'm doing with the mayor in the mayor's office is bringing clean water into my community. And I'm a part of that. And I definitely play a role with my perspective and also my knowledge, and my community collectively is helping me be a part of the solution. That's the difference when we think about like real, meaningful, rigorous learning, is when young people have the agency within themselves to truly see themselves as agents of change in this world. I mean, we could drill down however deep you want to go, but philosophically, those are three core concepts to BPL's design.
I love that so much because it fits so much with the philosophy of what the PATH Foundation and our work, and actually that's really sort of how our two organizations came together, because we are both in partnership with Education Reimagined and part of those learning cohorts and all of that work around the ecosystem sort of approach to all of these pieces. And so we're definitely advocates for those same things. And I love the fact that you recognize that as an organization and as an entity, as all of this has evolved, that, you know, putting students at the center of all of this makes all the difference in the world. And the fact that school doesn't need to be in a building, but it's actually out in the community, again, those things really, really resonate. For folks that haven't seen that type of learning experience in action, and unfortunately, it's not everywhere, but it could be everywhere. We all collectively believe that, right?
Right.
So how does a big picture learning school get started? Where do they come from? Are you doing work that is, just for clarity for our listeners, so are you doing work that is taking existing schools and transitioning them into a school that looks, feels, and sounds like, experiences big picture learning? Or are they starting new from scratch? Or is it some combination of all of the above, plus some that I haven't even thought of?
The answer is yes. It's all of the above, but predominantly the spaces that we support schools is, one is brand new schools that are opening, and then schools that are transforming practice. So those are the two spaces in which we coach pretty much. So for 30 years now, we have research, we have practices and pedagogy that we have really refined. And so as expert coaches, we go into communities and we really support. So the one thing I'll just say too, when it comes to big picture, I'll just say this. We are, at our core, we're a student-centered learning design. We're not a model. So the first thing I want to make a distinction between the model and a design. So a model is very prescriptive, cookie cutter. Here's how you do it. Here's the manual. Turn to page 32. This is what it should look like. Every step of the way, every school the same. We have design elements, which we call distinguishers, which we recognize and honor local communities and local cultures that are very distinct and unique in their own way. So how it evolves is very, very different. So all of our schools, if you ever come to visit, and I would recommend yourself and, you know, all of your guests who are listening right now to please come visit Big Picture School. And I'm going to use this opportunity as a shameful plug, Annalise. I am leading 13 school visits this upcoming school year, in school year 24-25, across the United States. So I'll share with your listeners the website, but they're called the BPL Guided Experiences. All I wanted to say is that when you come to a Big Picture School, the tenets, the feel, the culture is all relatively the same. But for that local community, what it means to them is very nuanced, very unique, and very individual to them. So the systems that we create in the schools, I'll share with you because I want to be concrete about this and then how it gets nuanced. So for instance, the five core elements that I call ARIA at Big Picture. So it's one student at a time, advisory, real world learning, interest driven project-based learning, and authentic assessments. When we get called in to sort of help and coach, those are typically the five systems that we support and coach and build infrastructure around that. So in any of our schools, it looks really particularly different. So I'll give you an example. One school that we're going to visit in September is our Gibson Eck High School in the Issaquah region in Washington State. And they, you know, because of their leader and their community, they are very, very strongly invested in the design thinking process. They are a design thinking school. So they have very unique interests around that. And so they develop these crash labs and design courses as interdisciplinary CompC-based courses that young people are engaged in.
Love that.
Yeah, and that's very, very centered to them. They also are a very strong CompC-based learning school. So they took our learning goals and created these competencies. They cross-referenced them to the Common Core standards, the Next Generation Science standards, and then they have a CompC framework. So you take a look at those different elements of design thinking, the crash labs, student projects, the competencies. You could see how, so for instance, the CompC-based framework, that's their authentic assessment. So under that umbrella, they've come to say to us to say like, hey, son, for our authentic assessment system, this is what's really strong in our community, and this is the direction we want to go. And as partners, of course, we're just like, all right, that makes total sense. And so I just want to share with the listeners that there's a true distinction between a design and a model school. And so we are thought partners, collaborators, co-laborers on the side with schools to really create a student-centered learning ecosystem that makes sense to them. So whether you're in a rural community, an urban, suburban community, which has very distinctive needs and demands and nuances, we come in and really as partners build from the ground up to around what makes the most sense for that community.
And, you know, that's so incredibly important. And my listeners have heard me say this numerous times. I always use the phrase locally derived and culturally relevant, right? You know, if what we're designing, building, advocating for, and living with doesn't look, feel, and taste like my local community, it's not going to be sustainable, right? But it's also not going to be successful for the collective set of learners who are going to show up there.
Yeah.
So I really love that approach that Big Picture is taking and honoring the uniqueness of those communities. That's spectacular. We don't always see that, I'm afraid. So since the Big Picture Learning Schools are coming from all of those sort of different sources then, and you've seen so many different places, so many different examples, so different local communities as they engage in this work, you know, even though we love the opportunity to have conversations and hear the great things that are going on, this work is not easy. And because we know this work is not easy, I'm wondering if maybe you could share with us like some of the things, the hard things that you have found that you bump up against over and over again.
Oh my God. This is a beautiful question. And the reason why I say that, we're getting into the heart of the work. And when we think about delivering on a high quality education for all learners while acknowledging all their brilliance, like this is it right here. Because I just want to say, again, our system, our current system is compliancy driven, one size fits all. We come in and we say this is learner centered and it's one student at a time. So we bump against each other all the time in all communities because we are working extremely hard to really support every learner to make sure that they're successful. But then, you know, the systems that are in place. So I'll give you one clear example where it's been the most challenging, right? So currently, our school system is meant to keep young people inside of a building on a schedule, minute by minute, every school day. And one thing that we value, just like I said earlier, students are the curriculum and the community is the school, right? And so opening up the doors to align with partners, community assets, community partnerships that become extensions of the schools, they become learning labs with which young people can go and connect with local experts and engage in meaningful, authentic, real-world learning, you are going to be surprised around all the challenges that come just with that. And I'll just share with you a few. So automatically, great. We would love to get young people in the real world. We develop some partnerships. Something infrastructurally that comes up right away is, well, how do we get our young people there? You know, transportation.
Right.
Believe it or not, is a very big thing to consider. And so we found our ways around that. So first of all, schools have made purchases for vans and built it into their budgets to get vans to transport young people. You know, if there is an infrastructure for transit system, the superintendent in the central office gives a budget for our students on those internship days that they take mass transit and they get to the internships. We partner with our parents who drop off and pick our kids off because they know that this is when they come to a big picture school, they know that this is what they're getting. You know, their young people are getting real world college and career readiness by going into these different industries and really experiencing what it's like to be in those industries. So the parents know what they're getting. So their commitment is they can help with transportation as well. And then for our young people that can drive, they drive themselves as well. So it's a combination of things, but it's a real barrier because what we're talking about is really getting young people out into the community. So something as simple as transportation. Oh, the other thing I share with you, with most local school districts, the high value transportation is between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. And then the high volume goes again from 1 p.m. to about 3 p.m. But the entire district buses sit idle from 9 until 1. Mm-hmm. And so we work with districts to say like, hey, this is an opportunity for young people to get some real world learning. Is it possible to get transportation? And 9 times out of 10 districts work with us and that's how we make it happen. So something as simple as that, and then such as transportation to get young people out, can be an obstacle. But one mentor told me that really changed my perspective in life in general. A challenge is really an opportunity. And if something is important to you, you'll figure out a way to make it work. And so this is just one of those things when we've been working in compliance-driven systems in our entire existence. When we talk about challenges and red tapes and changing hearts and minds, that's literally been at the heart of our work for the last 30 years. And every single day, it's a challenge. But it's also an opportunity. So we've been able to really just work with communities because we can come in right now. I think after 30 years, we know what those obstacles are. So the beautiful thing is we come already with a prerequisite of things that could be potential hiccups. And we work with the schools ahead of time to sort of, you know, to really address that ahead of time. So that doesn't become a challenge.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool. You know, we do a lot of that the same way as well, right? Because we recognize that, you know, you've got to design with those constraints in mind. It's not like they're not real, mm-hmm. right? And I can't tell you how many times I hear, well, we can't do that because. And so lots of folks just sit down and say, well, we're not going to then. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Right.
This is an amazing opportunity, right? To get super creative and to design around with this constraint in mind. I love that you use transportation because I can't tell you how many times I've heard transportation is the reason we cannot. right? And so I actually really appreciate that you keyed in on that particular constraint, because it's one that's, it happens everywhere, right? And the fact that you also highlighted that, you know, for most places, their existing transportation infrastructure sits silent for numerous hours of the day is, again, it's a giant waste, energy, time, money, right? And so for you to be able to work with the districts to get them to sort of recalibrate the way they think about some of those things, that's super meaningful.
Yeah. I'll share two other ones that spin at the heart of our work, and I'll just highlight it briefly. Something else that's a challenge, that being in a traditional system, I was in the Providence school system and then Newark Public Schools as well. And when you're in a system, and when you're in a compliancy-driven system, and when the culture is, we've always done it this way, when you're a part of that, myself included, so I want to be vulnerable and share that, you sort of just go along with the system. You like, you know, it's just like, this is how it's done. So I want to share two things, clear examples of just really how it doesn't need to be done and how we can innovate for and with young people. One of the first things is just that I hear a lot, well, we don't have permission to do that. And really what people are getting at is really around policy, right? And what I've seen, so our friends at Education Reimagined, and I just want to lift up, Sarah Bishop just did a report on really the innovative student-centered learning policies on the state level across the United States that are in play to help schools and their leaders truly redesign schools for a student-centered learning space. One of the first things that I've seen is there is a huge disconnect between policy and practitioners. So asking practitioners, hey, do you know that this is a policy within your state that allows you to credit your student learning differently? And folks are like, no, no, I don't know. What are you talking about? And I share that because if you've been in a system 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you automatically just get into a routine of things. And it's just like, it's just what you know. It's not your fault. It's the system. So I'm not trying to blame anybody for this. It's how the system is set up. However, when you think of the system, right, there's policies that directly from the state to say like, hey, you could think about seat time differently. Hey, you could think about authentic assessments differently. Hey, you can definitely create a work-based learning program to get young people out of the school. But folks are not pausing for a moment to take a step out of that system that you're currently in and really engaging in a really authentic opportunity to say, like, this is what my young people are saying they need. Like, this is, I'm a teacher, you know, I'm a history teacher. I've been teaching for 8 years, but I also know that something else is missing. And my students talk to me, and also my own experience is, I know we could give a little bit more of a dynamic, authentic, real-world learning. I want to connect with my community. I want to do this, but I don't know how, but I'm in the system, so I'm just going to keep racking. I'm just going to keep doing. But in actuality, there's current policies in place that allow you, as the on-the-ground practitioner, to really innovate. And what we've seen from Sarah's report is, state by state across the United States, there are policies that really support authentic, student-driven, real-world learning. So the first thing is really, it's a small dig, because before I go into any states, that's one of the first things that I look for, is really on a policy level. And then when I meet with people, I just really, it's just a conversation. It's just perspective. It's just like, hey, did you know this? Oh, you know, let's have a conversation. Like, how is it being implemented? Is it not being implemented? Did you know? So then it's just really just a conversation around the policy, you know? So that's a really big one as part of the work, because there are definitely ways with which folks can really step out of the bounds of the compliancy system and still be within the state regulations to do innovative student-centered learning work. So I just wanted to say that. And the last piece is really around teacher training. And I want to use myself as an example, because I want to be super clear. I'm not here to point fingers at anybody, because it's really a systemic issue. This is not any one person's fault. But I went through a very traditional school of ed program, secondary ed. I chose a concentration, history. And when I left and graduated with my undergrads, I am a content teacher, right? Like, I am certified for my specific content that I'm delivering on. And so we know that in this interconnected world that we live in, very few things are very isolated in specific soloed content kind of way. We know that.
Yay! I'm cheering. I'm cheering, son.
We live in our world is a world of intersections. And when it comes to learning, especially when it comes to learning, the intersections are everywhere.
Yeah.
Nothing is in silos. Like, you know, from the things that we want to learn, who we want to learn it from, to how do we demonstrate that we know all those different things. There are a multitude of ways that young people and adults can showcase their learning in all those different ways. So part of the work is helping our content teachers who have been traditionally trained. I teach biology, I teach US history, to say, like, hold on, one second. In actuality, this is your expertise and we value that, absolutely. But when it comes to student learning, there is a breadth of your knowledge and awareness that you have as an adult in this world that can really support young people, broaden their perspective around their learning. So part of our work is helping traditionally trained teachers become a generalist. Again, this is an inclusive process. We are not doing away with their content. We love that they have an expertise and a certification around their content. I want to say that super clear. But being inclusive, not only do they have the content knowledge, but we want to bring in the other knowledge that they bring to this world. And so we open space to help our educators become really strong generalists. In our design, our teachers are called advisors. Mm-hmm. And as an advisor, you are an expert of pretty much everything. And how you do that is really centering the work around young people and then really connecting around the experts to support the students' learning. So for instance, I'll give you an example.
Yeah, please.
Two pieces that the advisor brings to the table is really around academics and socio-emotional learning. So when you create small learning communities and you get to know the young people really, really well, number one, socio-emotionally, you know what their strengths and their areas of growth are. So when it comes to their learning, you could put that on their learning plan. You could tap into that and say, like, hey, dude, like, when it comes to organization, we're really going to have to kick that up, buddy. And we're going to have to utilize your Google Calendar. And this is your development of growth. I'm going to help you break this big project. And what we're talking about is executive functioning, right? Because young people, what they are not short of is extraordinarily wild and bold ideas. You talk to any young person and they are not short of that. But what they need support on is, okay, this is your big idea. Let's break this down. From your big idea, here are five concrete things that need to happen before this is complete. And in these five concrete things, there's three other little things that need to happen for these five. All right. And in those five things, here are the dates that you need to work towards in order to put you on a path to complete this by this. Like, that is executive functioning. That is social emotional learning. And that's what our young people need support on. And when you have an advisor who knows the young person really well, they could step in and really support in that area to really self-awareness, self-organization, like all those things to really support them. Academics, yes. And for a couple of things, they are their content experts, but also they're also colleagues of other content experts. So in our schools, we really value our professional learning community. So when we think about student projects, we sit down all the time and look at student work, and all of the content specialists are challenged, all of us collectively, to say, how can this young person go deeper? When it comes to quantitative reasoning, empirical reasoning, social reasoning, communications, how can this young person go deeper? And so we bring our collective expertise at the academic side, and we come together and really push the depth of the projects that young people are doing, and we give suggestions to the young people. So from the academic and the socio-emotional side, that's how we sort of really push the rigor in learning. Now, the last piece of this trifecta, so I talked about academics, socio-emotional learning. The last piece of this trifecta is the industry standards and the industry expectations. And that's where the local expert is. And it is beautiful because the local experts, number one, this is their passion. Number two, this is what they got trained on. Number three, this is their cumulative years of experience in this craft, in this world, in this field. So they have a ton of knowledge when it comes to industry expectations, standards, competencies. So what happens is you have this community of an advisor who's tapping into students' interests. You have a mentor who is a professional expert. And then you have a group of teachers that we call advisors who are the content experts. You bring them together. That's how you get to high quality student-driven real world learning. But to be fair and to be honest, because the traditional education system does not train our teachers in that realm, we find ourselves coming in, spending a good amount of time developing the ecosystem for advisors, for students, and for their mentors to really develop their muscles around high quality student-driven real world learning. So, but that's an authentic, real sort of support that we provide schools when we come in and support.
Absolutely. And it is exactly what our kids, our communities, and our educators, or in this case, advisors, which I do love, by the way, that is exactly what they need. And for the most part, that's what folks, if you really dig in, they'll tell you that's what they want, right? So they've just never experienced it before to say, hey, I know something's missing, and here's the thing I want. Right? And so that's why I've just so loved, loved, loved this conversation. And you might be shocked to discover that we've actually used up all of our time in this conversation. I told you it goes so fast. So here's what we're going to do. Although we're going to say goodbye to Sun today, I think that this warrants a part two conversation if I can convince him to come back and join me, because I've got more conversation that I want to have. But for today, Sun, I want to thank you so much, first and foremost, for taking time to talk with all of us. And second, for the work that you do, because honestly, the world needs big picture learning in so many ways. And it is so refreshing to me to get the opportunity to talk with other organizations and entities that are deep in the weeds doing the work that needs to be done. You never want to feel like you're doing it in isolation. And we've met so many people along this journey that I know that it's not an isolating factor. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Can I just say one last thing before I go?
Please.
One last
thing. Absolutely.
For all of my practitioners anywhere, I want to be clear with you. There's no keynote. There's no conference. There's no PD. There's no course that will ever, ever compare to you sitting with a young person, sitting with an advisor, walking the walk with young people, and truly seeing and experiencing what a student-centered learning experience is like. So I would highly, highly encourage, and I'm just going to say this, like, I'm grateful that there is a core of learner-centered schools now in every single state. So it doesn't even have to be big picture. But if you do want to see a big picture school, I'll be leading 13 school visits called BPO Guided Experiences. And I mean this genuinely as a practitioner myself, like being in the schools, experiencing the student-centered learning design, talking directly to the young people, talking to their mentors, talking to their teachers, talking to their advisors, it really helps you understand the different design elements. So if you do anything, I'd encourage you to please visit a learner-centered school.
Absolutely. And I can echo that. I haven't had the chance to go with my staff when they went to do one of these big picture learning school tours, but it was fabulous. And they came back so jazzed. They were nearly vibrating. So, you know, it's a win. So if you get the chance, absolutely. And we'll make sure in the show notes that there are links and the ability to reach out. So not a problem at all. Again, Sun, thank you so much for joining us today.
An honor and privilege. Thank you so much for inviting me. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.